there's a movement happening. Some call it Reformation. Others call it Holy Discontent. We call it the Resistance. Traditions and harmful teachings have kept the bride captive for centuries. We will explore these systems and contrast them with God's design. Join us as we discuss God's patterns for life, ministry, and most importantly, His church. We will do this with scripture, testimony, music, and satire. We are resisting the system and embracing the design. We are the Resistance.
We're going into hour number two talking about pain, and we really haven't even gotten to the meat and potatoes yet, but we're about to.
Right? I don't think there's a lot of meat and potatoes.
I know, but we've just been talking about dressing and fluff lately. Yeah,
gravy, mostly.
So we're talking about the impacts of pain suffered as a child and the process that happens with our minds and our emotions. The fact that if it's met with love, protection, and nurturing, then the results limit or even overcome those pain and the effects of pain on your mind and your emotions. The second result is where so many in the world find themselves today. It's where many in the church find themselves today. And it's something that the church appears to be ill-equipped to handle. Pain can damage the individual, period. It absolutely does. God designed the church to help restore and repair damaged individuals through love and the working of spiritual gifts. Would you all agree with that?
Yes.
Is that a strong statement? I think it is. Man has sanitized this messy process and removed the effectiveness of the church to function in this way. There just aren't many churches out there that are functioning in their spiritual gifts as a matter of restoring people from abuse of pain.
Right. So, and when we talk about, we talk about love, it's not just like the soft side of love.
Hey, buddy.
Right. It's like, you know, hey, you're not dealing with this stuff and you keep running to this other thing. So get in your face about it, that kind of thing. It's like whatever Jesus inclines you to do in your spiritual gifting will be ministering in love to that person. And sometimes it's very, very harsh.
Well, I'm going to be harsh right now and probably offend a very large portion of whoever might be listening. And I don't really know what else to do except to tell the truth, which is what I believe is that God designed the body of Christ to function through spiritual gifts to resolve all of the impacts of Satan's works.
Right.
Whatever they are, emotional, mental instabilities, whatever is being labeled as mental illness or anything else. And what the church is doing these days is they're sanitizing the process because it's messy. Mm-hmm. And they're utilizing the solutions of man to teach their members how to cope with the effects of pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's counselors being set up in all of the big churches so that they can refer you to counseling so that you can learn how to cope with your pain. Jesus did
not. Part of that is, you know, like what we were talking about last hour of just having the body that's actually united in very deep and meaningful relationships. And that requires vulnerability on both ends. Like in order to get close to somebody, you have to be vulnerable to show them, hey, this is what love looks like. This is what a human
looks
like.
That's where love is built.
Right.
In vulnerability.
And if they don't respond in that, then that's not on you. You can't make somebody vulnerable. You can show them how and you can encourage it. But, you know, if you're just going to be just as closed off and be like, well, I'm just going to go on about my ways, then so is everybody else. And no one's going to get healed.
Right. And many of the victims that I've dealt with or that we've dealt with will say that they really could hide well in church because the church is not probing. The church is not revealing.
Right.
The church is preaching.
Well, I think more than hiding, they stink and a lot of them were up on the stage.
They were
hiding right out in the open.
And some of them that we've dealt with have even, you know, after being confronted with these issues, came clean and said, I didn't actually ever own my own faith.
Didn't trust, so didn't believe in Jesus. And that's another issue of pain we're going to deal with, is that it affects the way people can relate to God. So Jesus did not come to earth, live as a man, die on the cross, and raise from the dead so you can learn to cope.
Right.
He came to bring you life and heal the hurting. That's what he's here for.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not experiencing that healing, then you're not experiencing what Christ came to give you. Now, there are people who take this topic of healing and apply it to the physical side of things. Oh, you know, if you can't see or if you got a broken arm or if you got, you know, a disease, then you're not right with God because God promises healing, and I don't believe that.
Was it they that sinned or was it their parents that?
I know, that's exactly it. And then, you know, there are people There are people who had no faith in Jesus that got healed. The man at the pool of Bethesda didn't even know who it was that had told him he was healed.
I know. I love that story because it's so nuts.
It is. And so faith can't be required in order to be healed just because that example flies in the face of that. And if you want to have a doctrine of, well, that one example doesn't define doctrine, well, then you can make up anything you want.
Yep. Right.
Okay? Because then the scripture makes no sense. What I know is that the healing that is guaranteed in scripture is emotional healing. Because God came to put his spirit in you and for you to become one with him. Mm-hmm. This imperfect body that may be defective while we're here is destined for destruction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is going to be gone. It is going to be replaced with an incorruptible body. However, you, mind, will, emotions, and soul, and your spirit are eternal. Mm-hmm. Those things need to be healed here. They need to be healed by Jesus, and he provides for that. So let's go through an examination of the process of pain that Satan so effectively uses against people. I'm going to use sexual abuse as an example because it's so stinking common in this day and age.
Yep.
It just is. It's everywhere.
I don't know. Do you know the most current statistics? I know it's massive.
It's in the 80s.
Yeah, it's about 80%.
Yeah, of women that have been sexually abused. So look around you, folks, 8 out of 10, and there, many of them are hiding it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to be revealed. And it's affecting them, and we need to encourage them to get on the other side of it and to get healed from it. There are different types of sexual abuse, and each can have a specific impact on the person. So for this example, we're going to talk about repeated abuse of a child by someone they know and trust. All right? This is just our example for this conversation. Because every time you add a different variable, you add other things to talk about, and we're already going to have trouble getting through just what we have set up for this show. So we're just going to keep this one example. This is a common type of abuse. We minister to many people that have suffered abuse at the hands of parents, siblings, extended family, or friends of the family. And that's who we're talking about.
Yep.
All right. That's who the abuser is. At the time.
So all of those people should be in that, you know, that community we talked of earlier where everything is
the
care,
circle of
nurture,
trust.
Protection.
Right.
Yeah.
Look, according to, I can't call her Baby Joe anymore because she'll get mad at me. According to JoJo, all of those people are as trusted. Mark, her uncle, you know, other Mark, her uncle,
right.
Madeline, Aubrey, the cousins, you know, everybody in that circle is trusted people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you just
lays herself bare to them. It's like they come in and it's like, oh, I love you.
Yeah.
Hug.
And that's, I don't want to get too much, you know, oh, we have to base our world view on how a couple of toddlers act, but
why not?
That's all I got.
I think
Jesus said, come as a child.
That gives us accurate, I think, depiction of how we are in our truest form.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's how I see that because it's, I mean, and you know, I'm not going to get super into that now, but like, it's like, I look at Joe and I'm like, wow, she is more what God made than I am because she has not yet been, you know, she's not yet believed a crap ton of lies. She's not yet been tossed about. You know, she's just so full of,
but
of
look
life
at us.
And energy.
I'm thinking as you're saying that, but that's my expectation.
Yeah.
I am expecting that that's going to happen to her as she grows. It's going to build her character and whatever. And that's just a load of, you know what, because it shouldn't happen that way.
Because right now she's right next to unstoppable.
And what we should be doing is striving for a family and for a church and for a community where that continues to blossom.
Yeah.
Not where it gets hardened and the edges get taken off and that the distrust and the caution comes in, but where, you know, the kids are full blast who God made them to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yep. And then if we can actually create an environment where that occurs, then holy cow, the whole world is going to be turned upside down, transformed. Christ is going to just shine everywhere. If there was a group of adults that had as much passion, love, and trust for what God made them to be as I see in Baby Joe, then it would be a fantastic world that I would want to live in. And that's why we're reforming the church, and that's why we're teaching this class, and that's why we're trying to get people back to the design.
I think that is the redemptive side, and I think that there's something special to those who have been abused and have been redeemed from that abuse because they've known the depths, and then they've fought out of it with Jesus' help.
Well,
now you get me really excited when you talk about that because I could picture that society and I would love to live there.
Well, I think you, because you have kids and you have kids that have understanding of pain and have dealt with pain, like you're starting to see the other end of that. You're starting to see them get healing and walk in victory and knowledge of who their creator is and knowledge
power.
Of who they were made to be. And it's like, you know, I remember whenever God just hit me with all that stuff, like I was just undone. I was like, wow, okay, so right now I see Joe for who she is, but, you know, one day something's probably going to happen and I'll have to wait. Maybe I have to wait 20 years, 25 years, 30 years before I get to see Joe again.
Let's just create the community and the family and the church that doesn't let it happen.
Right.
Right, because you
can't.
That
would be awesome.
You can't
get Satan's grip out of it.
You can't stop bad things from happening, but like you said earlier, if you surround that with nurturing and love and care and redemption and the Holy Spirit and all that stuff, then those traumatic events become significantly less traumatic, and they are immediately overcome by the power of the Spirit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about this, and it's like music comes on that touches her, and she don't care how many people are in the room. She's dancing. She's Ballerina Joe.
Well, she asked me to dance in the park yesterday to the music that was playing, but it was not good music, so I said no.
See? Because you're hindered. You're hindered by your idea of what the music means.
Yes.
Yeah. She no. Seriously, she doesn't know what that means.
No, that's true.
So for her, it's just a beat you can dance to. It's a beautiful thing, and she's like, but see, now we're training her.
That's true.
It's really funny that we do that. But just imagine if that was 25-year-old Joe that just decided that, hey, I feel like dancing because God made me to love dance, and I'm just going to dance right here in the middle of the room because that's what I feel like right now. But social norms.
Well, the whole thing
over.
I started on that was looking at her and her cousins and how they, like you said, they give themselves to people like utterly. And it's like you read, again, the New Testament's like that's what the saints were doing. Like they were giving themselves away. And it's just to see Joe, it's like, every once in a while she'll do the whole fake shy thing. But like after, a minute or two, she's like, hey, and she's just throwing herself and wants to play and fight.
And it's fun to watch Madeline walk around because Madeline just goes up and introduces herself to people.
Right.
Total strangers. She won't say two words to most of us, but she'll just be like total strangers. Hi, what's your name? How are you today?
Yeah.
It's like, got to know
she's
you.
She's intrigued
by she is. And it's great. And I never, when I had my kids, it was all like trying to make a living and, keep from having to kill them because they drive me nuts or whatever. Now, sitting back as grandpa and watching this brood that comes over and all interacts together, I much more see God's design in that. I see God's design for all of us in children. And we just don't even expect it. We just cast it away like it's not even supposed to be our inheritance. And it is. So one of the things as a child is they trust those providers to meet their needs. And when a child is violated by somebody they trust, they immediately become confused because that person's not supposed to hurt me ever.
Right.
And I never expected them to hurt me because why would they? I love them. I wouldn't want to – like whenever she was hurting Evan.
Yeah.
She got all sad about that and said that she was bad. But really what she was reflecting was that she didn't want to hurt him. She just was hurting him, out of whatever passion or emotion or, the moment. So when they get violated, their trust is violated. They immediately become confused, and their mind begins to seek out who will now meet the needs that they have of protection and nurturing and love. And not like over a long period. We're talking about in the moment. And they question, why is this why this trusted person would be hurting them? And at the moment of abuse, the first need is to be rescued from the abuser. Mm-hmm. It's that run. It's like if you've ever seen your kids around a scary dog or they get frightened by a thunderstorm or whatever – and they run to you, it's because they want to be rescued from this thing that's creating them discomfort or pain. And what happens in the moment of abuse many times is that no one comes.
Yeah.
Nobody comes to stop the abuse. And in my experience, my opinion is this. You can have your own opinion. That's free will. Is that every child has an understanding that there's a God. I think God puts that on our hearts. He wrote it on our hearts that he exists.
Yeah.
And in that moment, without any other understanding, they turn to God because no one else is there. So they instinctively know there's a God and he's supposed to help me. And one of the first effects of abuse is a violation of trust in people, and it destroys trust in God because he generally doesn't come and rescue in that moment because he's provided redemption and healing at a future time, but he doesn't always show up and destroy the abuser.
Yeah, and I think if that's never addressed, that only gets worse as you develop, your intelligence and your understanding of omnipotence and all this other, theological stuff. It's like you just know more and more his ability. Well, he could have done whatever.
And he didn't.
He could have destroyed.
Right.
And he didn't.
We're going to talk
like,
about that. So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
We're going to get into that really into detail after the next song and break. But let me just finish this couple sentences, and then we're going to go to that next song. So decisions are made in the victim's mind that there's no one to rescue them. They're on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And as they grow and they begin to explore faith, they often feel as though all of God's promises are for other people. But due to their experience, they're disqualified from God's love, from God's protection, and from God's promises. Mm. And we're going to go do another song and a break, and then we're going to come back and continue to explore the impacts, the vows, the decisions, the way that relationships begin to be handled, all the other things that are in effect. I will tell you this, though. I'm going to say 100% across the board, everybody who has abuse in their past as a child that I have ministered with, and it's been a bunch of people over the years, has had their relationship and their view of God altered in a bad way, not able to have a complete relationship with their Creator because of the decisions and the impact of what happened to them as a child, changed their view of God and their view of themselves in such a fundamental way that even though they didn't fully understand it, the lies and that belief were formed and grown through their faith journey to a place where they couldn't actually have what God offered for them.
So, and that really leads well into this next song. This next song is by John Rubin, and it's called There's Only Forgiveness. And it's basically a description of him dealing with pain and the effects of pain and how it can create justice complexes and lashing out in that pain and realizing, even by the testimony of Jesus on the cross, that there's only one conclusion that pacifies that pain, and that's forgiveness.
All right, are you guys ready to talk about pain some more?
We are.
Are you? Okay, so we were talking about the effects of pain on a person, on a child specifically, how they know that there's a God, no one rescues them, their need is to be rescued in that moment, and then as they grow and begin to explore their faith, they often feel as though God's promises are for other people, but due to their experiences, they're disqualified from God's love, protection, and promises. Mm-hmm. So these are the impacts of abuse. The event of abuse creates much confusion for the child. They explore in their mind what's happening to them, and they have no context for it. So the confusion
never happened before. Don't know what hasn't to do
happened.
Here.
Yeah, and if it's happened no before, now the this. Repeating of it doesn't make even less sense. It's like, why wouldn't somebody help? So the confusion causes the immature mind to seek answers, like what's happening to me, why is it happening to me, who's going to help me, and this stage of abuse creates some very common and identifiable effects. The child instinctively knows that something bad is happening. Now, in our world, children learn right from wrong through negative reinforcement. Okay? Whether you want to parent that way or not doesn't matter. I'm not talking about how somebody parents. I'm just talking about life in general. So you're a parent and you make a rule because you're trying to protect your child. Don't go out in the street. Don't touch the stove. It's hot. No, watch, don't run through there. You're going to fall. And what happens is they break the rule and then they get a negative impact because the things you told them could happen and hurt them do happen and hurt them whenever they don't do what they're told. So in the child's mind, they are being trained to understand that bad things are the result of them being bad.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way it is. No matter how much you try and overcome that as a parent, that life itself is teaching that wrong behavior ends up in bad results for you or punishment or hurt. So in the moment of abuse, they own blame for the event because it's a bad thing happening to them. So they must have done something bad in order for it.
Right.
They don't have any other context.
Or further, and not even just something they did. Maybe it's them. Maybe we're bad.
Exactly.
I must be bad.
Well, just like what Joe's reaction to, you know, don't be mean to Evan.
I mean.
Right. She owned being mean whenever that wasn't what was communicated, but that's what she grabbed out of it because that's the way our mind thinks at that early age when we can't comprehend, you know, deeper thought cycles. So this leads to feelings of guilt and shame, and they cannot fully understand or deal with these feelings of guilt and shame because they don't know, they really can't process those complex things. Mm-hmm. So in this emotionally overwhelmed state, believe it or not, they make decisions. And these decisions that are made as a child can have long-lasting impacts on their lives. The decisions made here can actually change the way people process emotion, the way that they form and interact in relationships, and even their relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So let's break this down into two parts. First, let's just discuss some of the decisions that may be made in this time. One of the most common decisions is that the victim is somehow disqualified from God's love. or people's love, for mm-hmm. that matter. I mm-hmm. mean, they're just disqualified. They're dirty. They're bad. They're damaged.
Well, I think
damaged.
That, you know, and their, you know, normal way is like, well, I know they love me because they're there for me and whatever that looks like for them. And then it's like when I really, really needed them to be there, they just weren't there. For whatever right. reason, they weren't there. So it's like, well, obviously, I just don't get it then.
Right. So they may grow to become a professing Christian, attend church regularly, even hold a paid position or a leadership position in the church, because we've dealt with all those people with this. All along the way, they don't believe that God can love them or will act out of his promises for them.
Yeah.
They think they're damaged goods. That's what they right. do. They're and beyond I think that, hope of restoration.
I think that surrounds like a worth complex, because, I mean, you know, it's like if I was really worth something, then everybody would have treated me like a princess or mm-hmm. or a prince, you know, but that obviously didn't happen, so I must not be worth much at all.
So there's a couple different reactions to that. Some just go through life trying to hold their head up high, waiting for the end, trying to keep others from experiencing the pain that they carry every day. Mm-hmm. The decision of disqualification is often one of the hardest to overcome, because what will happen is some people will take this disqualification and they'll turn it into some way of trying to gain qualification.
Yeah,
right.
So they'll strive for performance, for approval, for power, for control, for all kinds of different
things.
Well,
the trap of that, though, is that what they're trying to regain is what was lost in that moment. And that right. you can never go back to that moment.
It's well, that's
you can't yeah. time travel and undo what happened. And so there, it doesn't matter what, how much love or approval they get from whoever, it will never, unless that is affected or addressed, I mean, unless the initial thing is addressed, it will never bring any sort of resolution to them.
Right. The only thing that they can do that's of value is see that in the light of truth. And like whenever you said it can't be earned, and it's just like, you know, one of the things that Rich Bueller's books have taught me and was foundational for me was that there's no prerequisite for love. Like there's love does not have to do with what you do. It's the who you are part of you. So you don't have to qualify for love. Right. You exist.
We're going to talk therefore. About that whole love and approval thing probably right. on another show, because it's a big part of what comes out of
it
this,
is.
I think. So here's why this is such an ingenious method for Satan to use to hold people into bondage, because God is the one who restores and heals.
Mm-hmm.
And this victim has generally made a decision either that they're damaged goods and God's promises don't apply to them, so they can't be healed. Mm-hmm. Or they distrust God in such a way that they can acknowledge him because of his superiority as God, but they cannot trust him in an intimate way that was required in order to receive healing.
Right.
So that puts them in this catch-22 of being this professing Christian with no power for any transformation in their lives.
Right.
So they repeatedly go through cycles. And one of the things victims have is cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know somebody long enough, you'll watch and you'll see their cycle, mm-hmm. that they go through a pattern of behavior and then they start over and the pattern is still there. It may have manifest in different ways with different people, but the pattern is still there.
Right. Certain
that's
triggers
a sure sign of having abuse in your life,
right.
being a victim. So others, besides this disqualification thing, decides that they're guilty of the event.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing, is that they'll just decide that it must be something they did. So they believe they caused it to happen.
So, like, one of the important things from personal experience, like Jason said, they try to earn whatever that was back.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, if you choose that way to deal with that, you are, in effect, putting all of the blame on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying, I'm going to take responsibility for this by trying to do this, which is impossible. So whenever you fail at doing that,
right.
you know, which is inevitable, you feel the impending doom of all of that pain.
Yeah, because what happened was either a lack of love for regardless of what it was a lack of love, but it could have been, you know, an intentional infliction of pain. And so you're trying to undo that by your own accomplishments to receive something later on.
And the pain is still there.
Right, exactly.
It's still there always.
And it doesn't touch it.
And only Jesus can heal that. I mean, it's like, I think that's why counseling teaches coping methods, because only Jesus can heal that. And all you can do with ministering to someone with this kind of pain in their life is lead them to the well of water, Jesus Christ, and say, there's healing there.
Mm-hmm.
And if he touches you, you're healed. And you just got to trust and let him touch you and believe that he can heal you, and mm-hmm. he will do that
mm-hmm.
for you. It's guaranteed. It was guaranteed right. by the resurrection that he has the power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of any other way to get healed from that. So so we have the guilt thing, and what happens in the guilt thing, because they believe they caused it to happen,
Mm-hmm.
They take on an approach to life that makes them the problem. They have a hard time allowing others to see them as broken or to see others as guilty of sin. Does that make sense? So basically, they're always the problem. What will happen is they'll attract themselves to other abusive people or put themselves in bad situations, and it's always them. It's never the other people. They right. can't let anybody be guilty of anything.
Right.
They become excuse makers. Thing, right. It's excuse making
right.
is what they do. Mm-hmm. And one of the first one of the first steps to recovery for a victim is they have to learn to see the events through the eyes of the child, not the adult. They have to let people be guilty of what they did.
Yeah.
You know, I've had people sit with me and defend their abuser.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Over and over and say, well, you don't understand. No, I do understand. Yeah. You don't understand. That person was perpetrating evil upon
it
you.
It just sounds like that verse in that last song. It's like it's easier to be miserable than vulnerable.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what being vulnerable would be. It would be placing the blame where it's due because that hurts.
Well, what I've seen, another one of those themes that I've seen in people in that situation is that they will reject the victimhood or whatever of the thing that made them a victim, right? They'll defend their
abuser. Oh, I did it. I couldn't stop it.
And so they won't accept the fact that they were a victim in that situation. But in every other situation in their life, they will act as if they were a victim. They're like, "Why? Well, I can't control anything. I have no responsibility here." And they'll just like let go of responsibility, or act like they can't do anything to change anything. They can't ever get free from anything. And it's like, every other incident in their life, they act like they're completely powerless. But in the incident where they were actually a victim, they were like, oh, no, it was my fault or right. whatever.
Yeah. And that's because that's formative.
Mm.
So, all right, this is a really interesting point, and I think that it's a very important point, is if your victim is a child, and if you reach out for help and don't get it, and that happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, go to mom or dad, and they're like, oh, no, uncle whatever wouldn't do that, or your brother would, you know, that's not what you think it is, or whatever. They're shot down. Now they internalize everything and say, oh, it's just me against the world, man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's all I got. So they basically...
Which leaves no room for God.
No, not at all, because if everybody else has failed them, God hasn't intervened. I mean, I know people have told me, oh, I sat in my room and cried and prayed that God would come and do something about it, and he didn't. Well, of course he didn't, because the free will of people around you has affected you,
right.
and he doesn't intervene with free will.
Right.
That's not the way he operates. So he does provide for your healing, though.
What's he going to say when you're a five-year-old, just booming revelation that, hey, this is how the world
works. Or is he going to come and kill everybody that touched you whenever that's going to create pain and affect pain for other people that may love them and not understand what's going on? Anyway, so most of the children who don't get the love and the protection and the nurturing out of their family at the moment or when they find out about it, if the child is not believed and not met with those things, then that child will internalize that, put their head up, and they'll just make it through. And the lies get reinforced by the relationship changes and behaviors around them until they become an adult and they're a mess and they finally are like, man, I can't live like this.
Right.
That's usually when they'll try to find and seek help for whatever. Marriage brings it out. Children bring it out. Mm-hmm. Job changes, traumatic things, because they're already living at the capacity with their emotional pain.
Man,
so any emotional thing on top of it just breaks it loose.
I just think that the reality of like the statistics about modern day depression is just this is the root of that. I just have a very huge conviction for that.
Right. So the person doesn't try and deal with their pain until they're an adult, far removed from the event. And then once they try to deal with the pain, they look back at the event through adult eyes and adult mind. What I mean by that is you're a 5 or 6 year old child. You think in a certain way. You know certain things.
The bigger thing, though, is you feel in a certain way.
You feel in a certain way. When you're an adult and you're hardened and you're 15 or 20 or 30 years past the pain event that shaped you and all of your relationships have been distorted by it and your view of God has been distorted by it and the way that you process information and emotion has been distorted by it and then you look back at it and you're trying to put your current conditional emotion and mind into the event and trying to reason out what happened. And that's why you can't get free that way.
Yeah.
Because you're deceived.
Well, no, because when that happened, that utterly pierced to the very core of your existence and your identity as a human, as a living being. And now you're 30, 40, 50 years old and you're like, oh yeah, well, when I was 6, you know, blah, 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 did this thing to me. And that was really mean of them. And it's like, you're decades past the thing and like your whole emotionality and even what you think of that event is like you've got context for the word and like, well, there's genocides and there's all this stuff, blah, blah, and it really wasn't that bad.
Well,
when you were 6 years old, that destroyed your whole world.
Right.
Believe it or not, I've had women in their 20s say that I was molested when I was 6, but it was my fault because of how I dressed. And I'm like, really? So do you think that, you know, look at this six-year-old. Is there any dress that this six-year-old could wear that would make it okay for a 40-year-old man to physically contact them in a sexual way?
Right.
They're not thinking logically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're saying – they're putting in like if – you know, okay, at my current age, if I was inappropriately dressed, okay. And it's still not even right.
No,
right. Still, they, exactly. There's still no justification. But they'll go to those lengths to justify through their own eyes. They look back at the event through adult eyes in mind, and they reason how many ways they could have stopped it or what they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
And this just increases their guilt and their shame. And the victim has to learn to see the event through the eyes of the child and understand the limits of a child's mind and resources. Because, yeah, you know what? At 25, you could have had a concealed carry permit. You could have been carrying a gun. You could have called 911. You could have screamed. You could have ran out. But a five-year-old can't do all those things.
Right.
Right? Can't overpower the guy that's right. doing it or whatever. So they have to learn to let their abuser have guilt and the shame that rightfully belongs to the abuser, not the abused. And this is difficult because the abuser may be someone the person loves.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it really gets complicated because they have great difficulty in saying that mom or dad or my brother or my sister did this evil thing to me.
Yeah.
That's the thing they're trying to protect is yeah. the identity of the relationship because in most cases they were the innocent child loving everyone and this person violated them and they still love that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what they did was they spent the years after that striving to regain that right relationship. Like, well, no, I'm not bad. You can't, you know, don't hurt me anymore. I'll do whatever it takes and
right.
try to reset that relationship. And so now they're emotionally invested over the course of years and years. And maybe now they've got a coping relationship with that person where they can get along. And it's like, well, look, I finally got what I've always wanted and I can't destroy that now by going back to the pain.
You right. know?
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to go do our last song because we're going to run out of time faster than we think we are. So what's the next yep. song?
Oh, man. It's Ben Pasley. It's called Rugged Old Hand. And I've been waiting for like the perfect show to actually play the song in its entirety because it's basically just about getting to the core of things and how that's really uncomfortable. And he's just saying, you know, man, it's so much better when the water's still because it looks really clear. But you go digging stuff up and it gets all muddy. And I don't like it.
Dirty well, where the water won't flow. The silt and sand and the sins of my father down deep in the well, where the water won't flow. Why do you want to stay so deep? The shadow. Get home. Up from the deep come the hand of the healer, like a rugged old hand, like a pretty white dove. Why do you want to stay so deep? The shallow water, it seems so clean. Yeah.
people who have experienced this pain are not willingly telling everybody about it.
Right.
They're hiding it because they feel guilt, they feel shame, they feel disqualified. They're hunting their head up and they're trying to
go. It's a desire to protect themselves. Well, you know, right. they put it out there and they got to feel it all again.
The way you're going to see it manifest is by them being somebody that they're not.
Yes.
And you don't know that until you know them deeply enough.
Right.
And the other thing is emotionally, they're overwhelmed every day trying to keep this pain in because it never goes away. It just builds and builds as Satan piles things and piles things. And what Mark was going to say was that after the break, he wanted to talk about this idea of, you know, when you open this up, how it gets messy and how the church responds to that, right?
Yeah, so earlier when you were talking about how the church basically sanitizes this process of dealing with pain, I think that directly correlates to what you said about there being the reaction of fight or flight. And they have such a – most churches have such a desire to retain people that they don't really dig into that because, like you said, as soon as you dig into that, people usually bolt.
And at least if they put them into counseling, the counselor's part of the church, its office is in the church, there's an attachment there that they need to keep coming back to.
So,
even though in most cases, I mean, I've known
but
that
the,
people have...
The image that I got in my head when you started talking about that was one of like a trauma room, like a surgery room. So it's a really messy thing. Mm-hmm. You can't fix some of these really deep wounds without getting blood all over the place or cutting things open or tearing things out. So it's like,
no, because
you can't,
this wound is deep.
Right.
It's hidden under layers and layers and layers of reinforcing lies.
Yeah. When the victim feels the fear of death, you know, it's like the whole time.
My wife has a great way of putting it. She talks about, it's like you're telling this person who's standing, open this door and you see a room full of fire and you're telling them, you walk through, there's a door on the other side where there's, you know, healing and comfort and everything you're looking for, but you got to go through that fire first. And the victim has to be willing to get burned.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be willing to endure that pain because that's the pain they've been running from their whole life.
Which is in that
room.
Which is actually a really great picture if you think of the flames being God's refinement.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
And the thing, like God told, like me, my own experience with that was like, you have to be okay with being weak. Like, you have to be okay with being the thing that you really don't want to be. Like, you just have to be okay with being weak.
Broken.
Because sometimes you are. And compared to me, you are, because I'm God.
So we only got a couple minutes left, too.
I say you also have to be willing to undergo a lot of more painful things because, like, there's this wound, but it also takes more pain and vulnerability of tearing that open.
There's risk involved.
Well, here's
it's
why.
Like,
here's why. Okay.
Vulnerable. Yeah.
This is why that happens. Because they've never dealt with the pain at all. It's been stuffed and covered because as a 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, they don't have the capacity to process those emotions.
Right.
So those emotions have been in there stewing and welling and growing forever, and they've been pushing them and pushing them and pushing them down, and as soon as they open them up, it's like they're experiencing the abuse all over again.
Yeah.
It's like breaking your leg and then learning to walk with a limp instead of just getting the leg set, so when you go to actually fix it, you've got to break that again and reset it so that
it
heals
straight.
Properly instead of just learning how to deal with it and cope with it.
And then also putting all your energy into trying to hide your limp from everybody else.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like I have to pretend like I can walk normal so that nobody knows how much pain I'm in.
All the time. If I remember an old joke that my stepdad told me, it'll make you walk funny to try and do that because you're trying to hold all your suit parts up in different ways.
Anyway, yes.
Interesting.
One of the effects.
It's a good joke.
It
is.
I'll
on the way home.
You certainly won't because I'll be driving. One of the results of all this pain can be medication. People will medicate their pain. It's one of the reasons that a lot of people get into drug addiction or alcoholism is because they are trying to get chemical relief from the pain that's with them every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So others will indulge in behavior that they think will bring them value.
Yeah, well, they medicate also. I mean, like television, like whatever it is, they're just going to kill your your senses.
Anything that changes your state of mind in some way or another.
Some will be led into promiscuous sex, trying to gain control or power through that position.
Mm-hmm.
Some overperforming, some cutting. There's all kinds of different things that people will do. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to find what's missing. They're trying to fill these needs that were never met.
Right.
And whatever it is, whatever decisions was made, whatever thing they're looking for becomes insufficient for them, and then they continue to find bigger and better or more or worse or whatever.
Right.
So they have to seek something to make this right. And to seek healing from Jesus means opening up all the pain and re-experiencing it. And trying to medicate it, push it down is often what they'll choose to do instead. As they grow older, they change the thing they're seeking a lot of times. But really what I can say is the effects of early abuse in life usually is a discontentment with life.
Yeah.
Pretty much across
the board.
No happiness.
Basically depression.
Yes, yeah, having
that,
no
that is depression.
Hating your days. Yeah.
So right. You guys, if you're interested in this topic, you're going to call in, you're going to want to listen in next week because we've only got about a minute and a half left and I can't go into all this stuff, but we're going to be talking about making vows. We're going to be talking about transactional relationships, how that changes the way you interact with people. We're going to be talking about how do you seek help to get past this? Where can you go to actually get freedom in what it
that's
is that's
an interesting
you?
Conversation.
It will be. We're going to give you some first steps of dealing with your pain. So pray about it this week. Come back. Return to the radio next week. Get a piece of paper and a pencil and write it down. We're going to talk about starting you on the process. We're going to talk about seeing the events through the eyes of the child. Mm-hmm. And we're really going to encourage you to seek somebody who actually has that deals with this, and not from a professional restricted counseling approach, but from a spiritual body of believers, spiritual gifting approach.
Yeah.
Because that's what it takes in order to get free.
Because if you don't,
it takes Jesus touching you. It doesn't take medication. Right. It doesn't take you learning how to deal with your stress that's created from your undealt with pain. It takes letting Jesus into your heart to really open the wound, clean it out, heal it up, and set you on a path so that it becomes a testimony to help others
right.
instead of it becoming you hiding it from others.
Well, and anything,
doesn't do anything, any good.
Anything dealing with, you know, that has altered who you are is going to be a spiritual problem. And the only one who can fix that is Jesus.
The Resistance is hosted by Dr. Terry Goodwin, Mark Sanford, Jason Callahan, and Mark Goodwin. Our theme music is The Resistance by Josh Carrolls and is licensed by Marmoset Music. This episode of The Resistance Radio Show was originally broadcast live on KXEN 1010 AM in St. Louis, Missouri.
Thank you for being a part of The Resistance. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or directly from our feed at theresistanceradioshow.wordpress.com. Find us on Twitter at Disciple Driven or on Facebook at facebook.com/Disciple Driven Church or on our website at DiscipleDrivenChurch.org. To learn more about our missionary work in the inner cities of America, please visit sunministries.org. You can email us directly at terry@DiscipleDrivenChurch.org.